It's May 31st, 2016, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional.
But the truth is always naked.
And we're here in Northern California in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and I am Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider, and we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition and what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and a few surprises.
Our show is sponsored by Go Raw, makes natural food, a lot of sprouted food for you sprouts out there, because we know you are like little universe sprouts. And we also are sponsored by
Universe Spirit, awakening us to the impact of climate destabilization and how we can make a difference.
We're glad you're able to tune in tonight. We just hope it wasn't a problem for you, because sometimes it can be a problem for different people. But lucky you, lucky us, no problem is the featured phrase of the week. Yep, we're going to take a look at the whole issue of problems. No lack of subject material, eh? What? Don't you love it when you ask someone to do something for you and they say, no problem? It almost feels as good as if they actually solved the problem. Problem solving is one of the most growth-producing activities we engage in. So, if you've got a problem and you're looking for a way to pop a no in front of it, no problem. Or press 2 to hear no problemo. So here we are, Rochelle, looking at the whole issue of problem solving. I have to say that I love problem solving. It's one of my most favorite things to do. But when we say no problem, sometimes we're addressing the anxiousness that we feel in someone when there's like, oh my God, I don't think I'll be able to solve it in time. And in fact, we can assure them with a no problem. It's kind of like experience of grace coming in the no problem three syllable variety pack. What?
Well, I know you can't see, but he's extending his hand to me, and I'm not quite sure what he wants me to do with that hand.
Comment on it, which you did exquisitely.
No
Anything
problem.
Else you want to say about my hand reaching out?
I was thinking, like, when is a problem truly no problem? It's when we make something a problem. I mean, something happens to us. It just happens. But it becomes a problem because we feel responsible, can feel guilty, ashamed. Now, it's a problem. We'd be blamed for it. But it's no problem because we, as you said, are problem solvers. Humans solve problems. So, no problem.
So, in other words, before the problem became a problem, it was a problem wannabe.
No. There are problems that come up, like, you know, there's a big hole in the road. And it's a problem because you've got to drive into it or you have to fix the thing or drive around it. But it's not a problem unless you really hold on to it. Oh, my God, that's so terrible. I don't know what to do. There's a big hole there. But then it just presents itself as something to be solved. And then you solve it, and then it's no problem.
In other words, if you can get the fear out of the problem,
mm-hmm.
Then it becomes just a problem, like that life-changing incident I had, having gotten sucked into a car scam and thousands of dollars and not seeing anything remotely close to that in my bank account or prospective work situation. But at a certain point when I was loading up these two very expensive cars that I had to return from Las Vegas, more on that some other time, one of which was a $85,000 Viper with 10 cylinders, uses a lot of gas. And it only wants the best gas. You almost have to import the gas for that car.
Our gas is imported.
It has such high taste. That's right. It is imported. What was I thinking? Anyway, I'm standing at the gas tank in total fear about this situation because I felt out of control and in a heap of trouble. Wait a minute. That's just all fear. I don't have to have the fear be a factor in this. I feel obligated to include the fear. I feel like the fear is going to get mad at me if I don't include it in the problem.
Because fear is always tells you to either fight or flight. It gives you options that are very clear. If you're frightened, you know that you can either fight it or freak out and run away. But if you don't have the fear, what are your options? They may be millions, but what are you going to pick?
Well, that's scary. All those choices. You brought up the subject, and I almost included it in my email announcement today. I hope you got that, y'all out there, good friend. Listener, what a wonderful thing to be referred to as. Listener, think about all the ways you may have been described out there. Sometimes you're described as traffic. Sometimes you're named as consumer. Other times you're named as male or female. But to be named as I have thus named you, listener, now that's pretty special because he or she who listens will have a much better time in the problem-solving situation.
It's not just listening to words, but it's listening to what it is that you need to solve the problem. There's like an inner listening. You listen to your highest minds. So that feels like inner listening.
That can be a problem.
Why? You only have a low mind?
My low mind is very dominant. It's one of these. You ever been in a conversation with people who they just can't stop talking? I think you were in one just the other day, as I recall. They just keep talking. Bah, 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 bah. You can't shut them off. Well, that's what my mind is often like. So for me to get to the place where I shut the thing up so I can listen to that inner voice, because as it says in the Bible, it speaks in a still, small voice. The other day, I barely heard it. Miss Jimmy's just being very conscious today.
I hear it a lot, and I hear it loud, I guess. But that's me. When I'm faced with a problem, and I look at it, when I was teaching school, I taught elementary school for a while in my life, and the little children would come in, and especially in the wintertime when they had to wear little coats with hoods that tied, there was invariably knots in their ties, always. Miss So-and-so, can you please undo my knot? And I'd look at this knot that looked like it probably would take an hour to do, and it was 3 o'clock and we were supposed to be leaving, but I'd hold the knot in my hand, and I'd look at it, and all of a sudden, like the little directions on how to solve this knot seemed to come up. Showed up, and I'd know, oh, just pull this here, pull that there, and within seconds, the knot would get unclogged, a few clogged knots, and it would come back together. And it was a lesson, and I looked at it, and I thought, if you hold the problem in your hand, hold it, it's the knot. You're not trying to unknot it. But you're looking at how to unknot it, which is different than trying to unknot it.
I had the same experience as a director in theater. You're constantly working on scenes that don't work. They mostly don't work. They don't work until practically the end of the rehearsal time. So you've gone through many weeks of the scenes not working, and your job is to make them work. By working, I mean they communicate what the author of the play wanted to communicate in a way that's arresting, compelling, credible, creative, interesting, dynamic.
And if it's a comedy, funny.
Right. So it's not exactly a no-problem situation, but when I did it, I did exactly that. I'd look at a scene and it wasn't working and wasn't coming together, and then, boing, just all of a sudden, there was appeared on my knot that I kept around my wrist. And it said, make this scene work, you need to do this. Like that time we were working with that show, Company of Wayward Saints, and we had an actor who was Italian. He was from Italy, had a very thick accent. Mario. He was playing this braggart coward. Now, in this particular show, the dialogue isn't what it's really about. It's a commedia dell'arte, very broad comedy. It goes all the way back to the Middle Ages, practically. That's where it started. I was looking at the thing. He's so boring. He's not an actor. What can I do? And then, boop, I get this idea. Most of my ideas come with a boop.
The higher mind. That's why, because it's giving you the signal.
Right. Boop. So now I know what to listen for. I had this idea of have him say half his speech in English and the other half in Italian. It was really funny. Really worked. He'd just go in and out of English and Italian. Author, I apologize. I know you didn't write it in Italian, but I figured a few lines like that would be okay.
And it was funny. But that's it. That's the no problem. It becomes a no problem when we don't shy away from untying the knots.
No problem.
There's got to be some reason for all this misery. A secret evil corporation somewhere overseas. They're pulling strings, arranging things. It's a conspiracy. Oh, what about the ones who shaped the course of history? What if we petition for one grand apology? I'll write to my prime minister. You write your president. Everybody's wondering how the world could get this way. If God is good, and how it could be filled with so much pain. It's not the age-old mystery we made it out to be. Yeah, there's a problem with the world. The problem with the world is me. Oh. Well, some will say the devil and his legions, they put us in a headlock of submission. They lost all power over me a long, long time ago. And since I was a kid, you know, I caused a lot of hurt. And no one ever taught me how to put myself first. It came so very naturally, but I'm not a prodigy.
That's a group called Down Here. The song is The Problem. Professor, would you say that that's true, that the problem is me? Just look in the mirror.
Good evening. It's always lovely to be here with you both. Thank you so much for asking that. And as far as the problem goes, you know, it has been written that there is only one problem, and the challenge is to recognize it. So the question is, what would it take for me to recognize the one problem so that I can solve it with the one solution? Well, that got my attention. You can surely bet on that. If you're a betting kind of person, I personally don't bet much. Sometimes I like to say to people when they say things to me, no problem. But sometimes I like to say, you betcha. It just has a different feel as it comes across my mouth.
Professor.
Back to the question at hand. The one problem, the separation. As we've talked about before, because it's the only problem,
the way we erect barriers between one another. And then we call them problems when many of them aren't problems at all, but simply creations of our own making that cause problems. And so what is the one solution? Forgive it all. Let it go. None of it is real. It's all a masquerade, trying to deceive you into believing that you really are this separate person that's over here and there over there, and what's between you is the problem. When in fact, there's no problem.
I like that. Yes, that's true. I mean, we do think there's this gulf between us, a gulf that has to be surmounted in order for us to get together. When we realize there is no gulf because there's energy, and we create that energy between us, and we can create it in such a way that it's attraction or it's the opposite of attraction.
Polarization is good.
Yeah, but there's something that pulls apart. What is that called? There's a word.
It's the pulling apart word that you're seeking.
Thank you very much.
It is the activity of separating activity word.
Yeah, but like a magnet attracts and then it...
Repels.
Repels. Thank you very much.
See, you used the right metaphor.
Of course, there's no problem because we make the choice. I don't think people realize that we make those choices about attraction and repulsion.
We do if we're conscious.
We do it. Are we conscious of doing it? That's a whole other thing. But we do it.
That's the beginning of liberation, is to become conscious that we're unconscious, to bring out the old witness that we've talked about from time to time.
I love having a witness in me.
Senator, do you have like a witness inside? I know you've been on a witness stand, probably. You're a politician. If not, maybe they should have put you on that stand. Well, this Senator Beauregard, I think there's some humor deeply embedded in what you just said. And on another occasion, I'll see if we can dig it out. But this thing about no problem, it seems like everyone wants to stoke up the problem and put all kinds of clothes on it so we don't really recognize that it is the problem. That Professor Umbridge, that was very articulate of you. Oh, thank you so much, Senator Beauregard. We rarely get a chance to talk to each other. I always listen to what you have to say because it usually just applies to what I'm dealing with. Oh, you mean the politics? Well, that's just part of it. It's the body politics. People forget that. We have all these problems because people become identified with their party or their point of view, and they have to do everything in their power to stoke it up and make it all powerful so it won't get demolished by the other point of view. I'd like to be able to say to these folks, no problem, but you first got to get their attention, and for good or for bad, it's usually pain that's the thing that causes people to open up to the possibility of getting to a no problem kind of lifestyle.
Well, isn't it true, too, that sometimes the pain shuts down the mechanism and there is no problem to be solved? It's insurmountable. Feels like it's impossible. And the pain exacerbates that. And it's just like, see, I'm in pain, I'm suffering. That's it. That's my lot. And it's horrible.
Unfortunately, I don't have to experience this, but I always wondered about folks that was burned at the stake. Now, that seems like a horrible, painful thing to have to go through, and I wonder how credible you would sound if you walked up to somebody under those circumstances and said, no problem.
I don't think I would say that.
That's right. That would be the better part of discrimination. Keep your mouth shut.
In fact, I wouldn't be there. It would be too painful. It would be horrible.
It reminds me of those women who stayed under the cross as Yeshua was being crucified, was being subjected to this humiliation experience. But in some ways, it became a no problem for him because he was up there he took the attention off of himself because he had these two fellas who were thieves. One of them stole, I think it was computer parts.
Errol Strider.
And the other one, for some reason, stole license plates.
They had... No, they didn't have license plates in those days.
Really? They didn't have them like on the back of their like carts and their Ben Hur drove? Chariot. But the problem is that we have this opportunity to look at it and get to that place, as you were pointing out, of no separation.
A problem almost by its very nature is something to be solved. If somebody is dying, literally, there's no solving it. And if they're dead, there's really no solving it. I mean, they're gone. I don't think of that as a problem. I think if you have a problem if you've been jailed and maybe are being commuted to a death sentence, then there's a possibility you can solve that problem. But when you're in the throes of dying, not longer a problem. It's like, it's a definite, it's something like that. Oh, I can't find words.
There it is. Wait, it's right behind. The problem is about worry. You see, you stick worry in us. That's the one good thing about being burned at the stake. You have nothing to worry about. The worst is happening. But if you think about how much worry gets part of the situation that happens when it becomes a problem, to be able to get to the place of it just doesn't worry you.
Price of bread may worry some, but it don't worry me. Tax relief may never come, but it don't worry me. Economy's depressed, not me, my spirit's high as it can be. And you may say that I ain't free, but it don't worry me. It don't worry me. It don't worry me. You may say that I ain't free, but it don't worry me. You say this train don't give out rides. Well, it don't worry me. All the world is taking sides, but it don't worry me. 'Cause in my empire, life is sweet. Oh, just ask any beau you meet. And life may be a one-way street, but it don't worry me. It don't worry me. It don't worry me.
That was Keith Carradine singing the song It Don't Worry Me, which was a song made famous in the movie Nashville.
Okay.
And that famous director, Robert Altman.
I'm amazed that you can remember names. My name remembering days are coming to an end.
I have to confess something today.
What?
I haven't told you this. I spilled my drink in my black bag again. After taking so many pains and doing hypnotherapy and doing everything I can to make sure I wouldn't do it for at least the 12th time. But I did it again.
Now, this is a problem. This is a problem to be solved. So let's put our little heads together and think how we can solve the problem of you keeping the lid on when you put your drink into your little bag, whatever your bag is called.
It's a little bag. It's a bag I carry around the stuff that I use when I go to do housekeeping here at Lupin.
Loves doing housekeeping. He loves the immediacy of it. The satisfaction that comes from seeing something clean and orderly and beautiful. But he doesn't always do that where he lives. I was hoping, oh, if he does this here at Lupin, maybe it'll rub off and he'll do it at home too.
No problem. But, hey, tell him the good news about the story about the plate. Remember the plate last night?
Oh, yeah. I was about to fall asleep last night and I heard this crash on splintered glass. I went, oh, what happened? And you all said, I broke your plate.
No, actually, I didn't say your plate. You asked me, was that my plate?
I did?
Yeah, you asked me because I didn't know it was your plate.
You tell the story. You seem to remember it better. I was half asleep.
Oh, yes. I remember it well.
No problem.
That's true. You were half asleep. She said, oh, I love that plate. And then I went into a combination of guilt and supersized guilt.
And I went into, okay, another thing to let go of, and I just let go of it.
And then what happened this morning, Rochelle?
This morning, the plate that I thought he broke, which I remembered putting in the sink, was there in the sink. And the plate that he broke was inconsequential to me. No problem.
Isn't that great? And so I was relieved of my problem, and I was able to say, oh, no problem. I wonder what our good friend Barney, if I could invite Barney in to talk a little bit about no problem. All right, yeah, this is Barney. That would be very hard to convince people that I know about. For example, I know people who have walked up to other people and say, you are going to be a problem for me if you don't watch out. And they didn't mean it in a kindly, loving, sensitive way. So some people get rid of the problem by eliminating it if they're in a position to do that, if they don't have scruples. Now, not everybody's got scruples, because when people are born, this is what I read about, not everybody gets an equal amount of the same thing. For some reason, for a lot of people, when the scruples are being handed out, they didn't get much. There's other things they may have gotten. They got a fancy car and they got a gold necklace, but they didn't get the scruples. So back to the point at hand.
No problem, Barney.
There's no problem there because they have to recognize, like you said earlier, that you're part of the problem, or like that guy said in that song, you know, what's the matter with the world? And I can stand in front of a mirror. Guess who? It's me. It looks like I may be the problem. But what you're saying here is that if I get out of the way, if I step aside from myself, what you call it there, the witness, and I'm looking at myself. So it's not a bad thing when people say, oh, Barney's kind of beside himself. And I want to say back to them, no problem.
I like the fact that there's this realization that we are the problem. So it's us. We have to clean up our act. I've mentioned it on this show maybe, but many years ago, I was in the March on Washington to protest the Vietnam War. Some reason I was in the front ranks of it, and we went to the Pentagon. There was a guy on the roof of the Pentagon, which probably was Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. All of a sudden, the doors of the Pentagon opened up, and these young soldiers, they seemed really young, with rifles, with bayonets at the end of them, came out of the doors, and they stood there. This guy who was supposedly taking care of the march was on this, is it a balustrade or something?
Yeah, that's good.
If you know differently,
somebody, I got one
somebody,
for Christmas one year.
You write in to Errol and tell him what that is. Anyway, he was yelling, look what they're doing. You're going to let them get away with that. He was inciting fear. He was inciting riot mentality. And he was there for peace. I just found myself being so upset by it that I turned around, walked down the stairs, moving through the crowd, and sat down at the bottom of the stairs and began to cry because it was so painful to me that this was a peace march and this man who was the leader of this was just becoming so virulent. And in that moment I heard, you can't have peace unless you are peaceful. And that man, of course, was not peaceful, and therefore he has no peace in his life. And I vowed at that point that I would spend the rest of my life trying to be peaceful. And it's hard. It's a problem to be solved, to be peaceful.
Especially when she has to live with me. Oh, my God, Rabbi Greenberg. Hey, Gavalt, living with you. I am so glad I don't have to live with you. I love you. Don't get me wrong. You're one of my favorite persons. But living with you, I can just imagine what that would be like. You're always forgetting something. It takes you forever to get out the door. Rochelle told me, you say, okay, let's go. You know, and 25 minutes later, he's still doing things, and you look at him and say, what is he doing? He's not leaving. He's getting this, moving this, picks that up, goes in there, starts to go out, forgets something, comes back, forgot what he forgot, so he has to go back to where he started from and see if the memory of what he forgot will come back to him, so that when he goes in and looks for it, he'll remember what he was looking for and won't have to go outside to find it.
That's why it takes him so long. No problem. But the thing is, do you love somebody because they're perfect? Or do you love them for ingredients that are just endemic to them? Their little configuration of who they are just seems to work with your configuration of who you are.
I don't know. Let's ask our listeners out there. Why do you love someone? Are you aware of the ways in which you create problems, if not for yourself or someone else? To what extent do we participate in some of these apparently very large and dramatic problems that involve large numbers of people experiencing extensive amount of pain and deprivation? And to what extent can we participate in that? And with that said, I want to salute my friend Charles Moselle. Charles wrote the music for some of my poems, which are available on a CD with Charles Moselle's music called Psalms for the 21st Century. It's the more poetic side of myself. And we worked a lot together. So I find out Charles has recently returned from Greece, where he was playing music for the refugees, the Syrian refugees in the camps, teaching them music. He was like right there in the thick of it. And I really felt it was a very beautiful thing to do. And I just really want to honor Charles Moselle. And if you want to hear Charles Moselle and me, let us know. And you can reach us at eastrider@gmail.com. Or you can buy those CDs right out of our website under products. That website is thelaughingheart.org, thelaughingheart.org, not just any old Laughing Heart, thelaughingheart.org.
And you discover that it's really not a problem. The ability to laugh at ourselves, the ability to create out of our own being, alleviates problems. It really does. And when I'm on the stage and working as an actress, and even here right now just talking to you, I don't feel like I have any problems. Because I'm in tune with you. I just read this thing. Carol Burnett said that she doesn't do a one-woman show. She always has a partner when she's on stage, and that's the audience. I thought that was so beautiful that she moves into this union. And when you're in true union, there are no problems. In truth. You know, other than somebody trying to burn you at the stake, of course.
I've had that experience of the whole group being focused together in that kind of communion of heart and shared awareness. When we all come into this experience where we're all equally aware that we're all equally aware of each other being aware. And you get all of those awarenesses for the same price.
No problem.
Okay, good. What about you, Father O'Malley? Is this something that you, I'm asking like it's something, of course it's something. Oh, sure, it's always something. I think you did a show on that one time, didn't you? It's always something, it's the problem. But if you're not happy with problems. You can call it a difficulty or just trouble or the worry thing you brought in. How about a snag or a hitch? A stumbling block. There you have it. Or you've got an obstacle, a hurdle. Now here's a problem, a hiccup, a setback, a predicament, a plight, a misfortune, mishap, misadventure, dilemma, quandary, headache, in the informal sense, and even a nightmare. There's a lot of ways to postulate the problem, but I'd like to tell folks there's only one word for the solution, and that, of course, is the word forgive. As you were saying earlier, let it go. That's three words, but it still means the same thing. But if you want some words, well, the word on the streets is, when you can get to the place where you're not making problems for yourself because you're laughing at yourself and you're seeing who you really are in relationship to the whole, then you and the whole are able to say together, no problem.
Wouldn't you say that if Errol thinks that problems always have fear in them, then no problem has to have love in it? And forgiveness is love.
It's a fluid. I associate love, forgiveness, mercy with fluidity. I think of worry and all these predicaments that we get stuck on as not fluid.
Well, if they get stuck, of course it's not fluid.
Isn't that something? How that works? No problem.
I mean, yes, it's in a state of resistance. Our problems are definitely a state of resistance.
But it's great when you can get to a place where you can relax. This song by Willie Nelson and Kenny Chesney is called A Worry Be Gone.
Give me just one more sip of that worry be gone. I'm planning on feeling much better before too long. Got a world of trouble that I need to forget. I'm on my way, but I ain't there yet. Give me just one more sip of that worry be gone. Everywhere I look, trouble is all I see. Can't listen to the radio, I can't stand TV. Well, I've got trouble with the air, trouble with the water. People ain't treating one another like they oughta. Give me just one more sip of that worry be gone. Don't wanna hear no preacher preaching, no more politician bitching. All those songs about love gone wrong got me wondering where my baby's gone. Well, I can't suffer fools wasting my time. Don't give me no advice that rhymes. Just give me just one more puff of that worry be gone. Don't wanna hear no preacher preaching, no more politician bitching. All those songs about love gone wrong got me wondering where my baby's gone. Give me just one more hit of that worry be gone. Yeah, give me just one more sip of that worry be gone. Give me just one more puff of that worry be gone.
I wonder what he was referring to, want that puff of worry be gone. Can you think,
no
Michelle?
Problem.
Willie Nelson and Kenny Chesney, worry be gone.
They know what it's good.
I have had the perspective that when you take a puff of the worry be gone, it's like standing on your tiptoes looking over the fence of your own awareness.
That's a nice description.
You're up there, you're high. Normally you live surrounded by this fence, which is the limits of your awareness. You interpret and interact based upon all the baggage and assumptions and conditioning and conclusions you've arrived at to this point. But when you stop and get into the now, and you just hold stillness, or as I think you like to call it, Rochelle, when you sit in the silliness.
Don't think I call it that way.
Well, we
I observed that in you.
I took a T out.
I always use the word centeredness.
Center is good, especially when the image from pottery, when you have that thing perfectly centered there in order to throw the pot.
Or just any balancing act. But balancing across a chasm has to be really centered, because otherwise you fall down and get smushed.
Yeah, the smushing happens. This is Herr Schnitzel, professor of inner and outer physics at the Institute of Logical Incorrectness.
I don't think I ever realized where you were from.
That is our place where people come to study the illogicalness of correctness and logicalness of incorrectness. Well, it's a double major.
No problem, Professor. Go right ahead.
So what we're talking about on the balance, I am sitting and talking, and the word that just popped up on the computer screen as I'm listening to you is the word transcendent. That's like the transcendent coming down and interfacing immediately with me and my consciousness. And that's what happens when you stop and allow yourself to recognize that there's, well, no problem. However, it may look like a problem. If you want to do something about the problem, then that's why they give you the great problem-solving gene. You may not have gotten the scruples gene, but everyone's gotten the great problem-solving gene. It comes complete with every soul who enters the consciousness and begins to play the interactive physical game, and then with all the biological overtones.
Our granddaughter has a slew of toys that are problem-solving toys for the most part, because you hit a button and it does something. So that solves a problem in the sense that it creates something for her to see, and then she knows that you hit that button and that's what happens. We were with her last Friday, and she did something that was marvelous. She had a cup in her hand, and she moved her hand back, watching her dad all the time, and looked like she was about to drop it, and then he would reach over and get it from her because he didn't want her to drop it. And she laughed. And then she did it again. She set him up. She knew he was going to go for it. And she wasn't about to drop it. She just wanted him to come and get it. She kept laughing. And I thought, this is a way you solve problems when you're innocent and delightful, is that you create humor. You create a joke. You create something funny. Everything around you becomes fun and enjoyable. So you can solve a problem just by changing the atmosphere.
And one of the things you can do is change your diet.
Oh, gosh, here we go.
One way to change your diet is eat more go-raw food.
Well, that's true enough.
Enough with the high-caloric, greasy, sweet stuff. And there's this voice in me that says, no, you can never have enough of this high-caloric, greasy, sweet stuff.
Oh, yes, you can.
But as I've aged, I've recognized that in fact, can be a problem, too much of this stuff. And so I've learned to cut it back. Go Raw is helpful. And, of course, our other sponsor is highlighting what is
a problem.
A problem. And that is this amazing climate change. But I like to put it into context. And that is to remember that every problem, no matter how much it's a collective problem, is only ever experienced by the person within him or herself.
Which is why it's so hard to cure or correct or alleviate collective problems. Because as you said before, if you don't recognize that you're part of the problem, you're not going to do anything about it. No problem.
So it's good to kick back, and that's what we want to encourage you to do on this program. Imagine, for example, you took off and you're on the beach in the Caribbean. You're in Jamaica and you're laying there in the sun and thinking, wow, I got problems. You begin to hear.
All right, oh Lord. Ooh, na, na, na. Ooh, yeah. All right, oh Lord.
You don't want no problem.
Ooh, na, na, na. Ooh, yeah.
I don't want no
all
problem,
right.
Man.
Oh Lord.
No problem with me,
ooh, na, na, na. Ooh, yeah.
Feel the beating of my
all
pocket.
Right.
Said I don't
all
want
right.
No.
Oh, Lord.
No problem with me.
Yeah. Na, na, na. Ooh, yeah.
All through my
all
lifetime.
Right. It may go now. Me no want no problem with my heart, I say. Me no want no problem with my life this day. Me no want no problem with my heart, I say. Me no want no problem with my life this day.
Me no want no problem.
Ooh, na, na, na.
Don't want no problem, man.
Yeah. All right.
No problem with me,
ooh,
soul,
na, na, na.
Man.
Ooh, yeah.
Deep down in my
all
soul,
right.
Man.
Oh, Lord.
Me no want no problem.
Ooh, na, na, na. Yeah.
I said I don't
all
want
right.
No.
Oh Lord,
no trouble with me, woman.
Ooh, yeah.
Now that she's gonna stay by my man.
Give me go now. Me no want no problem at my soul, I say. Me no want no problem at my woman's day. Me no want no trouble at my girl, I say. Me no want no trouble at my woman's day.
Me no
want
no problem.
Ooh, na, na, na.
No
ooh,
problem,
yeah.
Man.
All right.
No problem with me,
ooh,
police,
na, na,
man.
Ooh, yeah.
Not with the
all
police,
right.
Man.
Oh Lord.
We don't want no problem. Are you on board with that, oh ye listener? Because that was Henry Turner Jr. and Flavor. And if you go to YouTube, you can actually see these boys sing it down
Henry
there in
who?
The Caribbean. Henry Turner Jr. He was the beloved son of... What was his father's name?
Must have been Henry Turner.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And who were they with?
They were with themselves. Yeah, and Flavor. Okay. I love that name. Hey, Flavor. And he goes, Witch. His last name is Witch. Flavor Witch.
No.
But his name is Flavor.
Everyone makes up things. You have to look in his eyes and you can tell that he's making something up. Can't, if you're on the radio,
there's
you
a problem,
can't
see. You
see.
There really are some problems that are like real, thorny, complex things that are causing toxicity, breakdown, disease, unnecessary pain and suffering, strife, on and on and on. I would say those problems are begging for a solution. They're on their knees begging. Please bring a solution.
There are people who are stronger than some people. They have an inner power. They're the people who get a signal from those kind of problems. And they do move into action as to, like, how can we solve this? And there aren't a collective because we don't know how to collect them. We thought things like the United Nations would really be that. Would be a problem-solving entity to solve the problems of huge egos trying to take over large sections of the world and subjugate people to their will.
I hate that. It makes me break out, people try to do that.
Definitely a problem. But so far, the solutions, of course, can't be heard by the people who want to do that. They are the problem. So if you have a whole lot of people come together who are the problem, it's really hard to solve the problem.
That's one of the most challenging things we face if we see ourselves as progressive and creative and open-ended systems as bumping into all this entrenched lockdown, no place to enter, dogmatic, totally biased points of view that have no tolerance or acceptance for anything that goes against their point of view and the whole world view and their very self-identity that's created, which is why we go to war over all that stuff.
I see in myself those areas that look for domination or want to be seen above somebody else being seen. And I'm aware that I can solve those problems within myself because I'm so aware of them. I'm aware of them every moment. And I have myself 24/7. So I can work on myself. One has to be motivated to do that. If you realize that there's no problem if I am no problem, then you start working on yourself. And you realize, well, at least one person on this planet is starting to get to that place. And if a bunch of other people start doing it, there really does create change. It's a thought. It's a no problem thought. How can you say that that's a problem? Because it's true. The only problem is that we don't do it. But if we do it, there's no problem.
We have to be motivated. It goes back to that motivation. I remember reading that we can begin to understand each other, and as a result of that, recognizing our value and actually growing to love one another. The more we understand one another, the more we uncover the reason why one does something. And maybe that's one of the great things I got about being an actor or a director, is that you're always asking the question, what motivates this person? And I got to play Richard III, Shakespearean character, arguably a very demonic person. And yet, as an actor, I couldn't judge him. I had to understand his motivation in order to play him, to bring that character to life, for whatever experience the audience might get out of it. But in that moment, I realized that acting in that sense, especially playing someone that's totally not likable, but yet becoming one with them, is truly like forgiveness. So part of what separates the actor who's doing that from someone who's just having trouble forgiving someone, a friend, or someone who has harmed them in some way, is that the actor isn't identified with the person in the drama. The actor knows he is himself. And the more we can recognize the very same dynamic in any of our interactions, the more we'll be able to be like the actor, to play the horrible Richard III's of this world, but not be the horrible Richard III's. In other words, to be in the world, but not really of it.
No problem.
Really? Glad you're back. Rochelle had a coughing fit.
It's very hot where we are right now. Hot and dry.
It's beautiful. I love it. I was outside all day today, just hanging sheets and drying sheets. I was the laundress today. And
Errol likes to have identities with what he does. He doesn't just do something. He is something.
I'm the laundress.
Actor. That's the actor in him.
I want to play all the parts. Now I'm playing a laundress. And my role is so simple. Hang and dry the sheets after you wash them. I love the simplicity of that, the motivation, the interior activities, the complexities that are going on in the character of the laundress as she approaches her job each day.
What about the man launderer?
Rochelle, you are taking me seriously. I can't believe.
I know, but I'd like you to use the masculines only.
Why? Is that a problem?
Everybody who washes things is a laundress.
Is it a problem for you?
It's sexist.
Wait a minute. We're going to have to close this show, actually, in less than a minute. We want to again thank our sponsors, Inside Out, The Naked Truth, and, we are that, Go Raw, and Job One for Humanity, and go to our website, thelaughingheart.org, and be good to yourself, and come back and listen to us some other time, will you? So, Rochelle, what do we have to remember about this whole thing tonight?
We have to remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
No problem.